I'm Leora Zeitlin. This is Intermezzo. We're going to start out with an interview today with Dr. William Clark, the indefatigable Dr. Clark, who is the conductor of the Mesilla Valley Concert Band and has been conducting bands in this city for a long time. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Great to have you here. So this Sunday is the Mesilla Valley Concert Band's next concert, and you've got some very interesting works on the program.
Yeah, some things that I've been choosing over the past, actually, 7 or 8 years that I wanted to put together in one program, and it just kind of fell into place for this time.
Let's talk first a little bit about Alfred Reed, because he wrote a piece called El Camino Real, perfect for our region.
And Alfred Reed is a unique person, to say the least, in the world of music. One of the most played people, composers, of all composers of any kind, nationwide or worldwide. And some people called him kind of a musical entrepreneur, in that whatever sold, it's what he was going to write. Well, you know, they make a living at doing that, you know. But if you pick and choose among Alfred Reed's many, many wonderful works, you'll find he was one of the finest manipulators of sound of any composer ever. And this is one of those examples. It's a three-movement work with no breaks, and based on three dances, a jota and a fandango, and I can't remember the name of the last one, but they're three Spanish dances, and they are just absolutely delightful. The thing about the piece is you have to play it in a very seamless way. If you stop, it just breaks everything. If you don't stop, and you really do the legato and all of those things that join the piece together, it becomes an experience for about 11 or 12 minutes. You'll never forget. It's really wonderful.
He wrote mostly for band.
Almost all for band.
And he was so eclectic in his tastes. He's got, I think we've got a couple of CDs solely devoted to music inspired by Shakespeare's plays. And then he wrote just about, you know, they aren't, some of them are programmatic, but many of them are programmatic music, but they are so delightful and interesting and diverse.
And he is not, it doesn't bother him a bit if somebody says, oh, that sure is hokey. It doesn't bother him. People like it.
Yeah.
And then he'll put a hokey little spot in there, and people will that'll remind them of something. He did a suite, his third suite, I believe, that every movement was something you just knew you had heard before, but it wasn't. Alfred Reed did all the music originally, but there was a rag in there. There was a march. There was a slow piece, and there was an introduction. There was a fanfare introduction, and it sounded like everybody else's music, except it was so much better because he does such a good job of scoring.
Well,
it's just phenomenal.
You know, in that, he is not alone. Some of the other great composers of the Western canon wrote music that was supposed to sound like folk music, or Dvorak wrote, you know, African-American spirituals, but they were actually original music.
Exactly.
People wrote Hungarian folk songs, but it was original music. It was just supposed to evoke that flavor.
And that's exactly what we'll hear in the Gordon Jacob, too, that we're going to do on the same concert.
And yeah. Well, we're going to talk about Gordon Jacob in a minute. I want to ask you about a conducting skill that just mystifies and fascinates me. When you look at a score, you're looking at all the different parts, and whereas for me, who studied the violin, piano, so I'm used to just playing my line of music, or maybe two lines of music if it's piano, you have to look at 20 or more lines of music simultaneously, and you're really seeing a whole vertical page. You have to be looking at it sort of vertically as well as horizontally. How do you do that? I just can't. When I look at that page, I don't understand how you can hear all those sounds at once.
That's exactly what I told my first conducting teacher. I said, nobody can do this. It's an acquired, it's nothing more than a skill. There's no talent involved. It's just a skill that with peripheral vision that you acquired doing that. And that now that they finally started putting all the instruments in the same place. Sometimes the horns and trumpets are switched right in the middle of the score. But you have all of the transpositions, too, because your scores are transposed. So if you stop and say, horns, that's you missed the B natural or whatever, then you have to transpose that to the concert pitch before they know what chord member it was, and technical things like that. But the the vision itself is purely habit that you form over years, and it just becomes a skill.
By the time you get up there to conduct the piece, though, you must know that piece inside out in order to be able to hear if somebody has missed a beat or somebody has missed a note.
That introduces us to the real problems of volunteer bands and orchestras and choirs like we have here, where no one gets paid. It still takes the same number of hours and hours and hours to work on those scores and have them ready to even rehearse, much less perform.
Yeah.
And when you have limited rehearsal time, you have to be even more ready because you don't have time to say, oh, I missed that, I'll get it next or tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. There's only next week. And we missed a whole week because we missed the snow day. We had so many people that couldn't get here for that night.
Oh, boy.
And so that puts you in a position. But it's something that's what musicians do, and if you don't want to do it, don't get into it. You know.
How old were you when you started conducting?
I was actually 19. And then at age 20, I got my first high school band job at age 20. And then just kind of went from there. But I did high school band for 11 years, then decided to go study with Dr. Joe Barry Mullins, who was among the finer conductors that I've ever known. And I studied with him for 2 or 3 years and got the doctor's degree, and then went to Delta State and then here. But the conducting itself is almost unteachable. I've tried to teach it for about 50 years also, and it's very difficult to teach someone to conduct. You have to give them an opportunity to learn, and it's pretty much up to them. If you get the ambiance and the atmosphere in which they can learn the things they need to do with the right brain, then they'll do it.
Because you have to be really like a fraction of a second ahead of everything that's happening. It's like you've got to be conducting almost not on the beat, but almost a nanosecond ahead of the beat.
That is an amazing observation, because that's the hardest thing to do. Every beat that you give as something that someone does at the moment is preparatory for the next beat. You have to give them tempo, style, dynamic, and everything else as a preparatory for the next beat. And it really is that's the hardest part. That's the most delicate thing to develop. Otherwise, we could just get one of these amplified metronomes and turn her on, let everybody go. You know,
right? That's the thing. The conductor is really doing so much all at the same time, containing
that. And I've been trying to convince a lot of people of that for a long time.
Yeah, you're a persuasive one. I'm sure you can do it. Let's talk a little bit about the Scriabin, because he was a very fascinating composer, very mystical, and wrote some gorgeous music and some really far out crazy music. And you got a short nocturne, and I know that you particularly love this piece.
Actually, I like every piece on this program. I try not to do pieces I don't like. I just don't do a good job of them. So, and this it probably is my favorite. And it was very early Scriabin. It's about 11 minutes long, 9 to 11 minutes long. And he wrote it for the left hand mainly, but back when he had injured his right hand trying to do exercises and everything to get ready, as someone else did, Schubert, I believe, or Schumann.
Well, yes, Schumann lost one of his hands.
Yeah. And anyway, he wrote this during that period, and it's Opus 9 maybe, and it is in his period. But right before he got into the mystic chord and all of those things that Scriabin actually is famous for. And this has a beauty about it that is indescribable. Most melodies, even Brahms melodies, in my own mind, I can listen to them and analyze them and determine why I like them so. What they do that really takes me into that level of abstract thinking. With Scriabin, it just goes a little bit beyond that. And I know this is a little piece, but it is absolutely fabulous.
Huh. And it's transcribed from piano to wind?
To winds.
Wow.
It certainly is.
And all
guess who did it? Alfred Reed.
Okay, so that brings us...
years and years ago. This is a very old piece, and it's so difficult, nobody can do it, but it's in some libraries, and I had to borrow it and couldn't find it anywhere. So I borrowed it and have it now.
Yeah, how does that work if you want to get a piece that's not very accessible or not in print anymore or something like that?
It doesn't work very easily unless it's out of print. Mm-hmm. If you contact publishers and they say it's POP, permanently out of print, then you have the... You legally can get it anywhere you can, and there's no problem with it.
Yeah,
you still owe the composer the rights and all of that. You can't arrange it or all that, but you can get it and perform it. And that's what we're doing
with the Scriabin. All right, let's talk about Gordon Jacob, because we're going to be then, right when you leave, Dr. Clark, listening to his original suite, which is what you're performing.
Right.
This is an English composer of the 20th century, and tell us a little bit about Gordon Jacob.
Well, Gordon Jacob was overshadowed so much by Ralph Vaughan Williams and by Gustav Holst that people don't know that much about him. He was a pretty... provocative young student. He was studying with Vaughan Williams, and he didn't study for very long because he just made the statement publicly that it took Vaughan Williams so long to look at a score that the period was over before he had time to say anything. And so he moved on and didn't study with anybody else. But Vaughan Williams then turned around and asked Gordon Jacob to do the transcription of his band piece, the English Folk Song Suite, to transcribe it for orchestra. So he had a great respect for him, and he said he was a student of mine, but there was nothing much I could teach him because all of the techniques he already knew. And Vaughan Williams wrote this piece and named it Original Suite because at the time there were the Holt Suites and there were the Vaughan Williams things, and he wanted people to know that he had written this originally for a band, and it wasn't written originally for orchestra and transcribed or arranged, which most of the things were back then, except for the Holst.
Okay, so you just said Vaughan Williams, but you meant Gordon Jacob. Gordon Jacob wrote this original suite.
Yes.
He orchestrated the other things. So I have a delightful quote by him that I thought I'd read. The composer may admire many of his illustrious predecessors and contemporaries and may love their work, but he will not show these feelings by imitating their styles, but by striving to come nearer to their spirit of adventure and independence of thought in his own work.
That perfectly describes him. I had not read that quote.
Yeah, it's on the website for Gordon Jacob. And we should just say, 20th century composer, 1895 to 1984.
Right.
I am not that familiar with, we have just a few of his pieces, but he was writing in a more spare style or almost neoclassical style in the sense of not the big, lush, romantic.
You are exactly right. And the thing that, where Gordon Jacob first became known was through his piece called Flag of Stars. And the piece is not done much anymore because the signature of this piece was one of the first extensive uses of asymmetric meter. He has a whole 5/8 section in that piece, very long. And at that time, nobody had done that. A one compound meter beat and one simple meter beat put together in the same measure, and no one could figure out how to do it. But it was a great song built on our national anthem. And it is a very fine piece, but you don't hear it played very much anymore because asymmetric meter is a little bit old hat. Now it's done, everybody does that. But it has some other valuable, musically valid things that we should be doing more, I think.
So a Brit writing a work about the American and
our national anthem.
That's nice. That's nice when you think about the long history. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. William Clark. The concert is this Sunday at 3:00. It's at the Atkinson Recital Hall.
Yes.
And there'll be a little holiday music as well, although most of the program is, as we've been talking about, these just fabulous masterworks for a band.
That's the whole goal right there.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot.